Great. Okay, let's begin. So, I like to start everything I do with just a bit of time arriving in ourselves before we get into interaction and talking and exploring stuff. Just a little bit of a pause, you could say. It's a kind of moment from the practice of focusing. For those of you who know that, for those of you who don't know it, don't worry. We'll tell you about that. It's just a moment of stopping and arriving, just a minute or so, and I'll lead us into that. You could just treat it like a bit of a meditation. If you want to kind of frame for it, but just a moment of pausing. So I'll lead us into that, and then we'll kind of then we'll take some next steps. All you need to do is be comfortable. You can have your eyes open, eyes closed, video on, video off, I don't mind. But as long as find a way of your body being comfortable, resting, supported is nice if you can get support. So begin by perhaps noticing, how you feel the support of whatever you're sitting on, sort of supported by, feeling it under you, whatever that is, chair or sofa, bed or floor. Maybe a support behind you. So just noticing your body and how it's held in the space. And then from there, just sensing the rest of the shape of your body. Your clothes, your skin, get a sense of that whole space you occupy, if you like, the feeling of being in your body, but through the contact of the edges of your clothes and the shape. And then just noticing just how it is in there today, inside your body, if you like. We're maybe sensing the breath as a way of going inside, just feeling, noticing the feelings, sensations, qualities. Maybe there are big things that are bothering you, and they're welcome. Maybe there's lots of your mind is busy and it's hard to even be present. All of that is okay. So wherever you are is welcome. Whatever you find it, as you settle and notice how you are, is welcome. So I'll just leave half a minute silence. I invite you just to be curious about how you are, acknowledging how you are. Okay, gently broadening your awareness out. Might look around if your eyes have been closed, taking in the environment sort of freshly. Here we are, Thursday morning, or whatever time it is for you in your part of the world. So, big welcome to you, especially those who've just arrived. So, I'll quickly introduce myself. My name is Peter Gill. I'm primarily a teacher of a practice called focusing. I'll say a bit more about that in a minute. I'm also a parent. So, that's where these two things meet. Yeah, I'm here and here to share some of how that practice of focusing has helped me with you. Will help you. So that's in essence who I am. Kirsty, would you just want to say a sentence about yourself? Is that okay?
Yeah. Hi everyone. I'm Kirsty. I'm a mum to a 9-year-old and 5-year-old. I'm a clinical psychologist. I've worked in child and adolescent mental health. I also teach focusing. More recently, I've been training in a parenting approach called Hand in Hand Parenting by Connection.
Wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, so Kirsty and I have been sharing that journey of being both parents and hand in hand parenting. We both use that approach and focusing. So always things come together today. So our seminar, it's really exploring how focusing can help this whole issue when we lose it with our kids. And we've all done it, maybe way more than once, many times in different ways. So what I've noticed over the past few years is how increasingly how focusing has really helped me, both as an ongoing practice, but also in the moment. And so we're sharing both those perspectives. And some of the tools from hand in hand parenting, which kind of gel really well with this practice. So the seminar will be looking at two or three topics. One is around connection. What does it mean to be connected to our children? What does that like as an embodied experience? And why it's important. And we can also be looking at triggers, looking at what happens in that moment, and what kind of, like, it's almost like opening up that moment a bit more, but more fully. When we lose it, what happens? What kind of parts of us get evoked? What happens in our physiology? What happens in our body and mind? And offering some focusing tools around that. And we'll be sharing a bit about how this practice has helped us. So that should take us, and there'll be time for questions. There'll be time for a bit of conversation around all that as well. So that's basically the overall structure. I'm just letting another couple of people in. Two seconds while I just send someone the link, because they can't seem to get in. I'm going to assume some people know about focusing, but some people don't. So I wanted to say a tiny bit about what I mean when I say that word. So it kind of gives a bit of a frame for the rest of the conversation. Focusing in essence is about paying attention to what the kind of body feels. So rather than trying to approach the world through thinking about it and through thought and through I'm going to figure this out, we listen to the body, we listen to what it knows. So at the heart of its philosophy is that there's something like, we underneath the surface of all of our thoughts and our critical mind, and always there's a kind of deeper knowing we have that's like, you know, if you like, in our body. So focusing is a practice of listening to that. It's a natural skill, everyone has it to some degree. In practice, it's something you can do sort of informally, alone, just kind of like, it's like a way of looking at things. But also, it's a kind of paired practice. There's a form of it, a bit like meditation. Meditation is both a kind of a way of looking at things, but it's also a discrete skill. So it's like in focusing, you can do some paired exploration of what's going on in your body, or what's alive for you, or some theme that's bothering you. And it's a beautiful practice, actually, a really lovely way of listening. And love your being with one another. And it has many applications, and this is one of them. You know, focusing can be used to help with decision making, with creativity, with trauma. But yeah, we're sharing today how it helps with parenting, how it's helped us with parenting. I don't know. Do you want to add anything, Kirsty, about focusing? Is that enough of a frame?
No, I think that's a great introduction. Great. Thanks, okay. Peter. Yeah.
Okay, great. And welcome to those, there's a few people just still arriving, so welcome to you. I'm going to hand over to Kirsty now, who's going to say a little bit about, help us explore this whole topic of connection. Is that, hand over to you now?
Yeah, that's great. And is it about 15, 20 minutes we've got?
Yeah, we've got about that out of time, yeah.
Looking at the time, yeah. I just wanted to talk a bit about this idea that Peter's been introducing of kind of connection, and I'm going to call it sort of empathic connection. And I want to talk about it because it's central to focusing. It's also central to parenting by connection. So when we parent in a way that puts the kind of quality of our relationship with our child at the center of what we do. And also empathic connection, it's like it's just central to positive mental health. I was thinking it's like a kind of magic ingredient for life. the word elixir came to me when I was thinking about it, and I thought, oh, do I really know what that means? But it seemed to fit. And I looked it up, and some of the definitions of elixir was, one of them was like, it's a substance that's capable of changing base metals to gold, which is pretty cool. One was a cure-all and a medicinal concoction. And I thought, yeah, that just sort of seems to get to the kind of magic that, you know, empathic connection in our lives can bring us. And, you know, the word empathic connection is a bit of a mouthful, really. So I wanted to sort of think about what, you know, what do we mean by that? And I was sort of sensing into it in a kind of focusing way, just almost like Peter was saying, you know, what do I feel in my body when I think of empathic connection, or when I bring it to mind? And I had this sense of a really kind of cozy, life-affirming, kind of colourful, deeply sort of restful feeling. And I was thinking it's also like when you feel really understood by somebody, that feeling of somebody's got your back no matter what. It maybe can do with sort of eye contact and touch, you know, when someone really sort of takes in your face. And that, you know, it could also be like that warmth in the heart that you feel when someone really is really present and kind of engaged with you, when someone delights in you, when you have a sense of deep enjoyment with someone else. And also like the feeling of like somebody, that someone really gets you and is tuned into you. So and this sort of empathic connection idea, it can describe the quality of a relationship. And I was thinking about this. The good news is that there's sort of research into sort of parent-child relationships in the field of attachment in psychology. And research has been showing that secure attachment, what's known as kind of secure attachment, actually it's only a third of the time parents who show secure attachment with their children, it's only a third of the time that they're actually very attuned, sort of tuned in with their child. And then the other third is there's actually times of rupture. And then the other third is when you're kind of repairing and reconnecting. So as a parent, it's like, oh, phew. Like, I mean, I don't know if I, you know, make it a third of the time, but, you know, at least it's not like the whole of the time. And then just as an aside, it's really fascinating that rupture, those times of disconnection, as long as they're followed by repairing and reconnecting, that actually builds resilience in children and is better than having no ruptures at all. So that's actually quite interesting. So you can have empathic connection, can describe the quality of a relationship, you know, and it's also the quality of a moment. So, you know, that quality of presence, when you're with somebody, with your children, how are you being with them? And, you know, I always try, I mean, it's always very successful, but when I pick the children up from school, it's like, can I be really present with them? You know, can I really take them in? Can I really look at them and show that I'm really delighted to see them again, if I am? Sometimes I am. And then the third thing around emotional empathic connection is actually it can relate to the quality of an emotional moment. And when I mean emotional moment, I mean when your child is being upset, when your child is showing lots of feelings, how we respond to those feelings can really build that empathic connection. And, you know, I guess, you know, some of us will have had lots of this sort of, whatever we want to call it, empathic, close connection, that cozy, being understood feeling. You know, a lot of us, well, some of us will have had a lot of that in our lives. But there'll be a lot of us who, you know, not actually had that much of it. And some of us may not have had very much of it at all. And sometimes, you know, maybe you don't even realize that you've not really had it, because it's hard to know what you've missed in a way. And so it can be quite, you know, thinking about it can be quite kind of a delicate area, sort of, it can feel quite kind of vulnerable. And also, you know, we can really get in touch with how hard it actually is. You know, like we can talk about how important it is for children, for mental health, but actually it can be really hard to give it to our children. Sometimes I'm very aware of that. You know, I'm busy, distracted, stressed, you know, it's very difficult. You know, we've got a lot on as parents. So, what I'd really like to do now is a bit like the exercise or the sort of introduction Peter did at the beginning of just sort of arriving and settling in. I'd like to do a bit of an exercise to explore this idea of empathic connection. So I'd like to sort of explore empathic connection both in relation to ourselves, because that's, you know, that's really an important part of all this. It's that inner sense of empathic connection with ourselves and our feelings and the different parts of ourselves, and that outer connection with other people and specifically with our children. And I'm so interested in how those two are connected. The more I can form a sort of empathic close relationship with myself and the different parts of me and my different feelings, the more I'm able to do it with my children. And it's, yeah. So in this exercise, I'm just going to just be, I'm not sure, maybe 5 minutes or so. And I'm just going to talk us through some invitations for things for you to try, exploring that connection with ourselves and connection with somebody else. And the idea is to just really kind of flesh it out a little, to really get a sense of what actually is this thing we're talking about, and how does it really feel, and what are the key ingredients of it. And it's just an invitation, so if it doesn't feel right, just, you know, don't do it, just do what's right for you. Okay, and I personally find it helpful to sort of close my eyes. It helps me sort of sense into things more deeply, but so you're welcome to close your eyes, but you don't have to at all. So yeah, so just settling into whatever you're sitting on, just really beginning to feel that support beneath you. And if you want to, you can close your eyes. So maybe just feeling those sensations of contact between your body and the support beneath you. Maybe noticing your breathing, just feeling the breath coming in and going out. Maybe noticing your tummy and chest rise as the breath comes in and fall away again as the breath goes out. I'm just beginning to kind of notice how you are. A sense of kind of friendliness to yourself, a sense of welcoming. Noticing and welcoming what's here. There might be different thoughts. Thoughts about what we're doing. Different feelings in the body. maybe emotions. And just seeing if it's possible to kind of almost send it all a message, let it all know it's just welcome to be here just as it is. It's bringing this quality of attention to ourselves, this understanding, tuning in. Letting whatever's here be here without any judgment, without any agenda. And now, see if you can bring to mind a time when you felt really close to someone. You felt maybe understood by them, really connected to them. You've had really good fun with them. Could be a friend, a partner, one of your children. Could be a pet. It could even be an experience in nature where maybe you felt some sense of close connection or love. And without thinking too much about it, just maybe sort of relaxing a little bit and just letting the kind of felt quality of that experience be here. So it's like letting that whole experience be there in you fully, sort of like marinating in it. You might notice how it feels in your body. Maybe there's warmth in the heart. Maybe a smile comes to your face. Maybe there's a sort of happy feeling. There might be images that describe it that come, or particular phrases that sort of seem to sum it up in some way. Almost just letting that experience be here and kind of allowing itself to sort of flesh itself out with words or images or feelings in the body. And we can also bring this sense of empathy and connection and understanding to whatever we find in our experience right now. So it might be that nothing's coming to us. We can't think of anything. It might be that it's bringing up some unsettling feelings, or it might be you're feeling quite blank. So whatever is happening right now, whatever it is, seeing if it's possible to just notice it, acknowledge it, and seeing if it's possible to send it that kind of sense of friendly welcome, like you can be here just as you are, almost just keeping company with whatever you find in your experience right now. In a few moments, we'll bring this to a close. So just beginning to sort of sense for a kind of stopping point. And when you're ready, just coming back to the group and okay. Actually, I've got a question. question, Peter. I was thinking that it would be good to just hear anybody's comments about anything they noticed, etc. And is it best to do it in the typing chat, or is it best for people to unmute themselves and talk?
Yeah, I think either is fine. If you want, if you don't want to speak, whatever you can just chat. If you want to speak, I mean, I guess, bearing in mind brevity, if I'm speaking.
Yes, exactly.
We want to hear from people, but yeah,
it's not, yes. So a few sort of points, but not
exactly,
not
exactly really. Lovely.
Sure. So I guess if anyone's wants to share anything they notice, I suppose anything that they notice about that kind of inner connecting, giving that sort of empathy and connection to yourself and those aspects you noticed in your experience, anything that came when you focused on sort of connecting with somebody else. And then something about, what do we notice about what are the ingredients of this empathic connection, or whatever we want to call it, this closeness, what actually is it? I don't know if anybody has anything they want to share about what they noticed.
And there's something coming up in the chat. Okay. Can you see that, Herbert? Just so you can.
I've not clicked on the chat.
Okay, great. Yeah, just so you can read if you want to read it out.
Thanks, Emma. Emma says, I felt much more relaxed and peaceful. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a quality of that connection, isn't it? It's like, there needs to be almost some sense of kind of relaxation in order to kind of connect with somebody. Mm. And then the connection can bring that relief and relaxation and peace. Yeah, thank you.
I had two words come up, which was like, one was joy and one was, like all is well, those words, all is well. I just like a little moment this morning with my son. We just had a little, I don't know, just something in me, like all is well. That's what comes to me.
I can really relate to that one. It's like a feeling of rightness. I've definitely had times with my daughter where it just, everything feels right. And Lucy, I noticed my grief coming up when I focused in on myself. Mm-hmm. I'm working with a focusing therapist on childhood trauma, and it's always one of the first things that comes up when I turn inwards. Thanks, Lucy. It's like it's there, wanting attention. And I guess that's where this sort of kind, gentle, accepting space that we create in focusing, or that we tune into, can really help with really strong feelings. How can we keep them company? Thank you. Sarah, hi Sarah. It helped me temporarily block out something I was worrying about. Like you can kind of get lost in the juiciness of that connection. And Miriam. That's Miriam. When I thought about the person, I felt her capacity to hold me. Yeah, I've definitely had that sense of it's like a feeling of being held. And I think actually there's such truth in that, when we, connect deeply with another person, it's like we hold each other. And what's so interesting is there's so much research and at the moment and psychological in the sort of academic psychological and neurobiological world that shows that that's literally the case in our brains, that when we do have that quality of relating and interacting with another person, we hold each other. Thank you, Marie. From Rachel. I'm struggling to find something to focus on. My strongest, happiest memories are from quite some time ago. Thank you for that. Yeah, and that's something when I've done this exercise in the past, I've actually had loads of really uncomfortable feelings coming up. So, oh my God, I've never had that. Oh, what is it? I'm like, oh my God. And I think what I found helpful in those moments is when I can sort of learn to sort of bring this sort of kind, accepting, keeping company to that, to the fact that I'm struggling to find something to focus on, and my happiest memories are from such a long time ago. Yeah. Thank you. Mariana, it reminded me of how much happiness there is in my life, simple things. Oh, yeah, and how I don't appreciate it fully. Oh, that's lovely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What came to mind when I was preparing this was just some times with my son, where I was just like rolling around on the bed with him and mucking around and just sort of tussling around and laughing. And it's so simple, isn't it? And yet I can be so busy that I just don't do that, or I'm just not, he wouldn't even ask me to do it because I'm just too stressed to, be able to do that. So yeah, no, that's lovely. Thank you. Thank you. Well, thank you. I think it's probably time to bring this bit to a close. But thank you very much, everyone, for your contributions. Yeah. Shall I hand over? I'm back to you, Peter.
Thanks. Good. Thanks, Kirsty. We're sort of turning our attention now to the opposite of what we've just done, which is these moments of big disconnection, which we call losing, which we're calling losing it in the title of the seminar. So one of the, I suppose what I just, the way I'm wanting to explore this is really through the lens of focusing and what really through the lens of curiosity. So I want to draw a little bit on your own experience and share a little bit about what happens in that most moments when we lose it. So just say a little bit about that. One of the things I love about this practice of focusing is it's given me the capacity to be curious about everything, no matter how horrible it seems. That's taken time, over the many months and years of practicing, it's like, oh yeah, that was that horrible moment when I really lost it. What was that like in my body? What did I notice? What was in it? So yeah, I love that. I love that this practice has given me that capacity. So we're going to take some of that now, and yeah, and just to normalize this process, you know, like we lose it, you know, we lose it, don't we? In small and big ways with our children, you know, it's, you know, and that happens in a bigger context of actually, I think, living in these small boxes with not a lot of support. Without support of a wider community is the most difficult thing to do in the world, you know, as a parent. I think we're really up against it. So I want to say that as a bit of a backdrop. We have really hard jobs as parents, so difficult. And so by that reckoning, you know, we're going to make, you know, we're going to lose it. something's going to happen. Perhaps parents have always lost it throughout time, but I think even now we're even under more pressure. Yeah, and this isn't about giving ourselves a hard time right now, and like it's not a kind of so if you find as we're talking about it there's a kind of sense of, oh my God, I shouldn't, and I've ruined my child's life, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but that sometimes we can get caught in a kind of very self-blaming way around this topic, and that's not what we're aiming to do at all. But we are being curious what happens in that moment when we lose it. So yeah, I want to draw on your experience, everyone's experience here. And maybe it's something, I'm just going to sort of pause for a moment and remember a sort of just a moment when you're like, you flared up, or you barked, you shouted, you did something. Just kind of touch in on it and let's share, like, what happens in that moment when we get triggered? What are the ingredients? So if it was a kind of, if you could open it up, like a kind of, what was, exploded view models of an experience. What happens in those moments in your body? What happens? What thoughts do you have? What feelings? What sensations? And is sharing as much as you want to share in terms of, you know, like, all sorts of things happen at moments. We say terrible things, don't we? Sometimes we do terrible things. You know, it's all welcome. It's a big open, no one's going to judge, no one's going to comment and judge it. So feel free to say it or put it in the chat. Like, let's just explore, sort of open that moment of losing it, maybe, and to see a little bit about what goes on in there, if that question makes sense. So what happens in that moment? Just name some things, name some thoughts and feelings. Just so we get a bit of a feel of it all. Yeah, who would like? Yeah, just put it in a chat or speak out. I don't mind.
I don't mind giving an example.
Yeah, please.
So yesterday my child started self-isolating for 14 days. He's 11 years old. Mm-hmm. His first piece of work was to read a book, and he just didn't want to read the book, or he just kept skating around it and playing with the cats. And I just kept saying, you just need to pick up a book and read the book, you know, to read a book. And it just built and built and built until I was like, I just want you to read a swear word book. And and I just lost it. I swore at him and lost it because it felt like, it's so simple. I just want you to read a book. All these years I've wanted you to read a book, and I love reading. I felt panic. I felt upset. I felt really emotional. And grief, I think, because it's my grief over the fact that my child doesn't like reading, and it's something that I absolutely love. I feel like I've lost him.
Right.
I've lost my child, who's a modern child who loves YouTube and playing Fortnite.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Catherine. I can relate so strongly to that as a dad of a 9-year-old boy. But yeah, it's right. So panic, you notice panic and upset and like grief and your own, is like your own wanting was in there. Your own, when I use the word wanting, I use that in a very non-judgmental way, your own kind of longing for and enjoyment of reading. So that's great that you could see all those different pieces in there. Mm. Yeah. Although, maybe you're saying it now. I mean, that moment, maybe you didn't have it so clearly in retrospect. But now you can, this is the benefit of this practice is in the moment it's hard, right? You don't see it coming, bam. Mm. But afterwards you can look and see the ingredients, and there's some real treasure in there. So thanks, Catherine. So yeah, a few words came up on the chat. Frustration, resentment, yeah, wordlessness, angst. Thanks, Rick. Yeah. Push the brim, running out of breath, weak. Yeah. Yep. Physically it can be quite challenging, can't it? You know, the stuff that what gets evoked in our body, I really want to make space for that. Like, it's powerful, like it's not just emotions, like actually in the body it's like can be really hard to be with. Sometimes it can be like an explosion, raw comes out of me, it takes us by surprise, it feels really aggressive and harsh. Absolutely, we get, you know, in language of focusing, we get taken over by a part of us, or at least that's one piece of it. We get taken over by a part of us that's just like, had enough. And we see it happening. It's kind of humiliating, isn't it? Or you can't, like, oh, here it comes. You don't even get any warning. Bam, that's it. You've suddenly been taken over by this part of you. So, yeah, a few rage. Yeah. Struggles to sleep. Yeah. Yeah. I've added that a lot around sleep. We'd all recognize these trigger points. Hi, Harry, I'll be with you in a second. Just read a couple more bits. It takes on body. It's huge rage. Yeah, that's a big piece of it, isn't it? Rage. Welcoming that. Right, all the energy is rising up. Internal dialogue. Yeah, I want to come back to that. Involving swearing, I like it. Or externally. Yeah, I'm like, where did my kid learn that word? Oh yeah, I said it. So, you know, it might be internal, it might be external as well. Harriet, do you want to share something? Sounds like you're...
Lucy actually wrote it in the moment that I unmuted it myself. So I also have a toddler, and it's those times when she's refusing to sleep or needs more and more and more from me to go to sleep. And it's either, and those, when she's asleep is time for me. And I have such great need that is built up during the time of caring for her that I'm just like, that's when the swearing potentially doesn't stay inside. And like, I need you to go to sleep right now because this is my time. And, you know, sometimes I've said forcibly, I've got a need right now, but not as calm as I am right now, or even smiling. it feels really strong because my need is there.
Yeah, exactly. I so relate to what you're saying, Harriet. Thank you. Exactly. With that precise moment, I mean, that's been a big thing in our parenting is bedtimes. And by that point in the day, I have zero, you know, like, I mean, maybe zero reserves. Like, I'm just done, right? I'm done. Just go to sleep with swear words in that. And yeah, that's often when they need it most, actually. It's when connection is really hard for them. This is one of the things I've learned. Like, my son, it's like, it's scary for him. It's like a moment of transition into an unknown place. There's a lot happens in that moment. And I'm like, I haven't got anything to deal with this. Yeah, so we lose it. So, I mean, but why I also say that, because I think these moments, there's a lot happens in those moments. Like, it's not, it's, there's a significance about when these things happen for the child. You know, of course, there's a whole world happening in them in this. And it's what we're looking at what happens in us, but of course, there's something happening in them, right? So we've got just a few more comments. Yeah, you relate to all of these. I totally identify. Yeah, great. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Any ideas on how I can help my partner coping or managing his anger? Yeah. So it may not be our anger. It might be someone else in the family too. That's something to welcome, isn't it? Something else gets triggered. Sometimes we get triggered. Someone else. We'll come back to that because we're going to talk a little bit about, well, you know, our strategies with ourselves. But I guess in some way that might be communicated to somebody else. I mean, there's a delicacy, isn't there, in that with our partners and people with how we do that. That's a whole big piece we can't look at, but we can share a little bit what we can do with ourselves, which might be shared with them. Matt says, yeah, there's a tipping point. My judgment, I can see how, yeah, but the urge is strong, exactly. So I just want to sort of, yeah, kind of pull some of these threads together. So what we've got this kind of ingredients that makes an explosion, you know, and it's like a powerful, I think it's a broader set of conditions. We might be hurried and tired and other stresses in our life. But then we've got this is some kind of triggering that's happening. Something in us is being touched. Something deep in us is being touched by what's happening in there. So calling that a trigger. And then we have, and then that brings a lot of physical and emotional things into being, which focusing has a lot of to bring to in the moment, but also in later on. But then we got all the kind of judgments and the kind of, oh my God, I've lost it again. So I just want to make room for that kind of process that happens afterwards and how hard that is. So the shame we might feel, the self-criticism, blame, and say for me, focusing's helped massively with that. You know, meeting those critical parts of us, and I'm going to call that, you know, it's what they, yeah, there are parts of us that get really critical because they're really worried, they're really scared. And look at this more on the course, but that's, I will just in a nutshell say, you know, most of our process of criticism around ourselves is really comes from a, like deep anxiety, let's say, or fear. And focusing can give us a way of meeting those parts of us differently and not believing them, not believing the words, oh, you're a terrible parent, you've ruined your child, no one else would ever do this. So just making, there's kind of, so man, making some room there for all that. And what else to say here? Yeah, maybe that there's more there we could open up, but I want just to kind of like, if like there are always layers, you know, always layers in that moment of being triggered. But I want to hand over to Kirsty to just talk about one layer of that I think is important to bring in here. So one piece of that, and there's lots more to talk about on the course we'll come to, but let's just look at one layer. Is that all right? I'll hand over to you, Kirsty. Hand back to sort of zoom in on that piece.
Yeah, no, that's great. How long have I got?
You have about, I don't know, let's say, five minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, great. Brilliant, thank you. I just want to talk about, yeah, one aspect of what can be going on when we really lose it with our kids from a sort of psychological perspective. And it's what I'm referring to is when we kind of lose it, and the feelings just seem really out of proportion to the reality of the actual situation. And when that happens, it can be that we're actually reacting to feelings from the past that have been activated in us or touched in us by the current situation. And, you know, this happens a lot in parenting, and there's this whole idea of, you know, we can carry around unfinished business or emotional kind of baggage from our childhoods. There's a psychotherapist called Philippa Perry who talks about it like an emotional time warp. It's like in those interactions with our children where we lose it, we can feel like we're reacting to the current situation, but it's actually we're reacting to feelings from the past. Because, you know, a lot of us had moments and experiences in childhood where we kind of didn't get the responses we needed from our parent, our feelings didn't get heard. We may have had experiences of shame or harshness, and for some people, it can be a lot worse than that. And if these difficult experiences didn't get the right kind of attention, empathic connection at the time, they kind of get stuck in us, and you know, they sort of lie dormant in us, kind of ready to be triggered. And it's weird because we're not really aware of this. And we're not really aware that that's sort of what's going on, that maybe at times, you know, past feelings are kind of coming up in those interactions with our children. And I just want to touch on memory, because that can be really helpful in understanding this. So in terms of memory, we have sort of explicit memory and implicit memory. And explicit memory is the kind of memory we're most familiar with when we think of memory. And it kind of develops from the second year of life, and it's a kind of more conscious process. So when those memories are being laid down, we actually are aware of those experiences as they're happening. And when we remember the memories, there is this sense of recollection. We kind of know we're remembering something. But what's relevant in these moments where we lose it with our children is implicit memory. So implicit memory is present from birth, and conscious attention is not required for the laying down of these memories. So we don't need to be consciously aware of these experiences for them to become these implicit memories. And when these memories are activated in us, there's no sense that we're remembering anything. So it's implicit memory is a kind of feeling memory that involves emotions, behaviours, perceptions and bodily sensations. So actually, you know, what can happen when we lose it with our children is that these implicit sort of non-verbal memories are kind of being triggered. And, you know, no wonder it feels out of our control. You know, I feel this is a real cause for actually, you know, being kind to ourselves about this, because it's actually, you know, this whole process is going on in us, and no wonder it's difficult to just change it. No wonder we keep losing it when we've said we're not going to, because things are being touched in us from the past, and they're kind of coming up. And there's another there's a trauma therapist called Bonnie Badenoch who, instead of using the word triggers, she talks about it's like these parts of us have been kind of touched and awakened. And this really fits with focusing, because actually they're being touched and awakened in order to get healing, in order to get care from us, in order to get that quality of emotional connection that they didn't get at the time and that they need to kind of move forward. So what I love is this whole reframe that I've really done myself, that, you know, I've moved from, oh, I'm such a crap parent, what's wrong with me, why do I keep doing this, you know, I know all the theory, I know what I should be doing, but I just can't do it. I think someone in the comments said the urge is just so strong, and that's exactly it. It's like, oh my god, I'm out of control here, I can't control this. And the reframe is actually, no, I'm not crap, there's nothing wrong with me, something from the past, this implicit emotional memory is kind of coming up and needing healing and care and attention in order to, it's stuck in my system and it needs this emotional connection to kind of move forward. And that's where focusing can be so helpful, to kind of work with these parts of us. And just last minute, just a kind of concrete, a very, very brief concrete example was with my son a few years ago. He was about three, and just this period of defiance, and it would just really do my head in. And I knew rationally, it's very normal, it's age appropriate, he's testing the boundaries, he's feeling his power and agency, you know, it's actually quite healthy. But I would just get this harsh, aggressive response when he kept throwing peas on the floor or stepping on flowers when I told him not to. And in focusing over a number of sort of focusing sessions, I was able to really sense that something in me from my own childhood had been affected by this very issue, that, you know, at times in my childhood, it was hard for me to really be a child and to be treated with that kind of kindness and understanding around times where I kind of was defiant. And so the harshness and aggression sort of mirrored what happened to be in my childhood. So I was very able to just really be with that child part of me that just needed to have been allowed to, you know, just be a normal child and to have my, you know, really healthy defiance be treated, you know, for what it was, with respect, you know, firm, kind boundaries, but, you know, without judgment. And actually that working on it in that way just transformed it. And the next time he threw peas, you know, I was much more loving and effective in my response. And it was just like the sting had gone out, that urge that somebody talked about, the sting had kind of gone out of my emotional reaction. And it is a bit like a transformation. It's lovely when it happens. Yeah, I think that's probably enough to say now, Peter.
Thanks, Kirsty. Yeah, particularly interested to hear about that implicit memory and like all that stuff going on under the surface, you know, that is acting on us, but we're not aware of it. And this is where focusing really comes in, because it gives you this capacity, a skill, a way in to what's happening underneath, both in the moment and probably and afterwards, you know, when you can have some time to really look at what happened in that moment. And I love this trigger equals something being awakened. I'm going to use that, because it's a funny word, isn't it? Trigger is used a lot in our language, or at least in the world I move in, and it's got a sort of feeling to it I don't like, but like it's a bit, something bad's happened. I mean, so of course something has happened that might be really difficult, but like it's not intrinsically all bad. So awakened is because something's been awakened in us. Yeah. Yeah, part of us being touched, exactly. So this is something, a real, just want to point to it in focusing, this way of languaging and feeling into our experience. And I'll just, it's like, instead of saying, maybe just do it now in your own inner kind of awareness, instead of saying I'm angry, say something in me is angry, or something in me is really angry. So notice the difference between saying I'm so furious to something in me, some part of me is really furious. And just, you know, just feel the difference in yourself if you take those words in. I'm furious, or something in me feels furious. And maybe you can sense a difference right here, I don't know. But do they sound different? I'm curious, actually, just to get a couple of comments. So is there a quality to those ways of saying it that you can hear or feel in your own experience when you say it one way? Can you hear how it's a part of you? Or can you sense some difference there? Does anyone get a feel for that difference between I'm furious and a part of me? Part of me feels. Or angry. You could say anxious, of course. I'm just going to put it in the chat. Anxious is also a good one. Just something in me. So it's just a kind of movement from feeling like it's all of you, even if you're just saying it to yourself. Yeah, right. something in me feels anxious. Difference between I'm furious and a part of me furious brings awareness to experience without drowning in it. Yeah, exactly. That's the idea. It's not about pushing away the feeling and not like, okay, I'm not having it. I'm fine. I'm not angry. I'm not, it's like, that's, you know, we might try and do that. It doesn't work for me. And we also know quite readily from experience, how does letting it take over, bam, isn't so helpful for us. But yeah, it allows me to be with anger. Yeah, and there's a space for something else. Great, exactly. So there's a space, as well as the furious, there's a space for something else. Great, thanks, Miriam. So this is a big principle in focusing, and in a lot of other methodologies, you know, that we have parts of us. We have parts of us that we can meet. And focusing is one of the many beautiful ways of meeting those parts. Yeah. Let's check where we are. Okay. So just a little snippet of a tool from focusing that we'll be using on the course. We're going to take a little bit of time. Maybe we'll do that first, and then we'll have questions. So maybe Kirsty and I will take three, four minutes each to talk about. Maybe combine those two pieces, Kirsty, about it's like how we use this practice of focusing, or some of the tools of those in our life as parents, both in the moment when we get triggered, and also in an ongoing way. Yeah, do you want to go first, or shall I go first? You're muted.
Never mind. Yeah, I can.
Yeah, do you want to snip it around? Yeah, Kirsty, go first, and then I'll say something, and then we'll have a few questions as well.
Yeah.
So, 3-4 minutes or something.
Yeah. Actually, one thing that was, I was talking to my husband about the webinar, and he said, actually, I used to be surprised the way you used to lose it with our daughter when she was little. She's now 9. In the early years. And he said, yeah, you just don't do that anymore, you know. And I do occasionally, but like nothing like I used to. So that was like, yes. oh my gosh, focusing is just, you know, it's hard to even, it's helped me massively. But I think one thing is about focusing's really taught me how to, you know, be with my feelings during focusing, but then that filters out into my life more and more. And so in focusing, you know, you can, I've just seen Sarah's comment, I can't imagine you losing it. Oh, yes, I can really lose it. So this idea of in focusing, I can really be with my emotions, you know, focusing gives you sort of tools and ways to, you know, really keep company with your experience, with your emotional experience, in a way that you're not, you know, minimizing it. And you're also not overwhelmed by it, because it's a something, it's a part, as we were just talking about. And I've just seen so vividly how when I can say, you know, I found it hard to be with anger, for instance, but in focusing, you know, I can really, you know, keep company with my anger, let it be there as fully as it wants to be. Imagine it wants to just rage and throw a tantrum and something that I wasn't able to do. It wasn't allowed in my childhood to do that. So, and I can really see the connection of really, you know, when my children have strong emotions, you know, I feel a real kind of deeper sense of empathy. You know, I'm able to kind of stay with them and keep them company with their feelings much, 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 much more. And it's that relationship I talked about at the beginning, of that inner connection to ourselves, connecting to outer connection with others. I think there was some talk about, you know, how we can just get so burnt out as parents, and focusing's just helped me to be much more in touch with myself and really be much more aware of my needs and what I need to do to fill my emotional cup up. So that's been, which then, you know, filters into the children. So that's been really helpful. And triggers, I mean, that's been massive, as we talked about working through triggers and things in me that are touched from the past. And Peter and I had also talked about like emergency strategies, because, you know, focusing as a practice can kind of, you can go off and explore triggers and, you know, but actually there's sometimes in the moment where you're just up against it. And there's some articles that I can email afterwards that will be useful for this. But one of them came from Hand in Hand Parenting. It sounded really weird, but I did it a few years ago, and it was to lie down. So the situation, I was in my kitchen, and I can't remember the exact details, but I just knew I was just at my wit's end. It's like, you know, that feeling of just being up against the wall, and I was just going to like explode. And I just remembered this article I'd read that, you know, when that happens, maybe just, particularly if you've got young children, just lie down on the floor. Because it just shifts the dynamic. Sometimes the children come up to you and connect with you. And I lay down on the floor. They were kind of intrigued. And then I actually started crying, because what was beneath the rage was just this, you know, oh, this, like, this is too hard. I can't cope. I need some help. You know, just that sort of, those strong feelings underneath. And I just cried for a few minutes. And I just said to the kids, oh, I just need to have a good cry. I'm, you know, I'm okay, but I'm just having a cry. And they were sort of like, And then it was like miraculous, because just lying down had allowed me to get beneath the anger, to the what was beneath, and I'd released those feelings and I felt so much better. And then the evening progressed, you know, much more merrily. So that was a slightly random emergency strategy, but it really worked for me. I think that's...
Thanks, Kirsty. Great. Really loved you to hear that. I'll just say a little bit about how I've used it. I think I guess focusing has given me this way of taking, you know, really listening and therefore healing, I would say, to those parts of me that get triggered, have got triggered, and that's an ongoing thing. But yeah, so I take a moment. This happened this week on the weekend. I really lost it, and I happened to be doing teaching that weekend. So yeah, in a paired practice, I took that moment of being triggered, and I really gave space to all the feelings that were there, the kind of grief and the, but it was really clear to me how something, it was beginning to heal to an older kind of wound in me. So that's just profoundly helpful, you know, and it's free. I didn't need to pay for it. Even better, I didn't need a therapist, because my focusing partner can listen to me and I can listen to them. I mean, of course, you might need a therapist, that's different, but one of the focusing is beautiful, because it's a resource you can have in your life like that. It's just like you meet up with someone every week and you've got this ongoing practice where you can really get beneath the surface and explore what's happening and heal it, offer it healing. Another way it's really helped me is applying those same principles of deep listening to my son. So giving him that same quality. This is really rare in parenting. Too rare. Like, when do you spend time listening to your child and just listen to them? You know, you don't give them any advice or try and get them to do something or explain some other bit of it. You know, you just go, oh yeah, right, you're really sad, or you're really upset. I know that. Yeah, this is really hard for you. Oh yeah, yeah, you hate mummy. Okay, I know. Let's really hear them as they are, without going, oh, but you know, you need to do that and you need to read the book, or you need to, you know, like, we get caught in these other strategies so often. It's very, very rare we just offer listening, and I'm doing that more and more. It's really hard, I have to say. It's the hardest place I find to take listening. It's ridiculous, really. I teach listening all day, it's my life. But I can do it in moments with my son, just listening, with nothing else, just listening. Last one I want to share is just, well, I'm going to call it time out, but not time out for my son, time out for me. Right? this happened very recently. I'm like, I really recognize this rage is building up. And I said to my son, like, I'm going out in the garden for a couple of minutes. If I don't go out there, I'm going to say something really bad. He's 9 and he's just about and old enough to get it. So just, I went out and I just took myself out of the situation. I knew I was going to explode. So that was a little emergency strategy I've been offering, time out for me. And I just went to the garden and just gave some contact, and something in me is really furious. It's so furious he could smash the world to pieces, you know, and I was just really with it, really hearing it. And he's still going on in the background telling me he hates me, and, you know, but I'm not really engaging with that. He's fine, he's safe. I know he's upstairs in the room, and he's also, you know, but I'm just, and then I can just attend to myself, time out. And I could come back in and go, oh, okay, I'm feeling a bit better now. And I could, yeah, listen a bit more easily. And it kind of down, it de-escalated. That's what happened next. It de-escalated. So time out for me, so important. I call it emergency self-empathy. Because focusing can give you this moment of emergency self-empathy. I could say a lot more about all those things, but those are two examples, really. Yeah, sort of deep listening to myself, deep listening to my son, and emergency moment for me. So, well, yeah, let's have some questions on anything we said, really, or any. I mean, there's not loads of time. We've got like 5 minutes, I'll say, but we've opened up a big topic, I'm aware. But still, let's just give a little bit of time to what's alive in you about it. I welcome any in a chat or just in speak out in the group. And then we'll talk a little bit about what next. Because there was that question earlier on as well, wasn't it, about the partner losing it? Yeah. Just wondering if there's anything to say to that. How can we learn more about this? I'll come to that, if that's all right, Sarah. I'll talk about some next steps. Yeah, great. I'll just come to that. Any other questions or comments that want to come? Yeah, it takes some time to process and be with the feelings. Your example, yeah, I'd have been out there for 2 hours. Yeah, like, thank you. No, I mean, I didn't resolve it all in those minutes, but I just de-escalated it. That's the matter. Like, I just switched it from being like, I'm going to blow to, okay, now I'm coming down, you know. So, yeah.
Peter, can I just make a comment?
Yeah, please, yeah.
Just, it's so easy for me to kind of feel, not I'm the only one, like I kind of get it, but isolating feelings like I shouldn't do this and all of that territory, and actually not only to hit, well, a lot to do with hearing other people like, yeah, this happens to me too, but then also having a context to think about it and potentially have ways of managing it's just brilliant. So thank you to both of you.
Thanks Matt. Yeah I get it, absolutely. I can really, I go down that road of like, all those other parents are getting it right, and I've just failed massively. I've just ruined my child forever. And it was, and yeah, so hearing it and normalizing it, so helpful. Thanks.
I just respond to Catherine's. Catherine says it's something about implicit memory. I feel like if I don't have explicit memories of my childhood to focus on, then could I be just making it up? I think that's a really, really important point. And I've, you know, thought about that a lot. And I think that's where focusing is just so helpful, because as Peter was talking about at the beginning, we're sort of tuning into a sort of bodily wisdom and a bodily knowing. And, you know, sometimes in focusing, you know, I'll be like, well, I've got lots of theories and thoughts about what's going on, but actually let's just put those to one side and let's just get a real sense, you know, and this comes with practice. I've been focusing for, I don't know, 12 years or something, you know, and it's got easier and easier to do this, and it's not always easy, but it's like, well, let's, you know, get a real kind of felt sense. What does my body know about this? What feels right on the inside? And I don't have a lot of clear memories from my childhood, but it's like putting the jigsaw together. When I was in touch with that part of me that got really harsh, surprisingly harsh and aggressive to my son's defiance, it was like, there's a sense of, you know, someone from my childhood here. And I got a feel, and then a memory came of when I was a teenager and how one of my parents had responded to me over a sort of defiance thing, and it's like fitting the jigsaw together, but it's like you can always fall back on focusing to really kind of sense, is this true? Maybe it doesn't feel true, but it's like really relying on that sort of deeper knowing. And that is the territory of implicit memory. It's sort of, you know, focusing takes you to that place that's slightly beyond conscious awareness, and that's the territory of implicit memories.
Thanks. Yeah, good question. Here's some people talk about the body remembering, you know, that's another. A body keeps a score, you know, it's that Bessel van der Kolk book around trauma, you know, so there is some sense in which, yeah, it has a different knowing than our conscious memory.
Aware of the time, Peter, should I say brief about stay listening, just as a takeaway?
Yeah, just as in a nutshell, that'd be great. We might run over a couple of minutes, but let's just, yeah, it'd be great if you can, should I say that? I
wanted to bring in this hand-in-hand parenting by connection, and it very much fits with what we've been talking about, and it teaches these sort of really practical, it's an American organization, teaches these really practical tools. It's such an emotionally intelligent and practical approach, tools to kind of help parents, and one of them is what they call stay listening, and it really relates to what Peter was saying about how we can listen to our children's emotions. So it really fits with focusing, but I just wanted to kind of, and I can send a little handout by email about it, but it's just such a lovely way of being with our children's emotions. And it's just this idea that culturally we tend to, you know, suppress them and distract and all that. But actually we know that we have this natural healing mechanism of having our emotions heard and released, and then they kind of move forward and we move forward in our lives. Like when you've had a good cry in the presence of someone you feel close to, it can be transformative. It's like a burden's lifted, and it's backed by brain science. You know, the thinking brain can kind of get back on track when we have our emotions heard. So stay listening is just this idea of letting a child have their feelings when they're upset, and so it's about kind of moving in close and just keeping them company, and just letting them almost reach the end of their feelings. It's so tempting to stop the process, but you know, it's like these feelings are a sort of wave, and you know, they've got a beginning, a middle and an end, and if we can allow a child to get to the end of their feelings with our close loving presence, eye contact, warmth, maybe a little touch, you don't need to say too much, you know, that can really help them and build their emotional resilience, actually. And an example, just very, very briefly, was a few years ago, leaving my mum-in-law's house, my little son, he was probably three, you know, he sat on the floor and got all upset because nothing was right. And I can't remember the details, like the shoe wasn't right in the bag. And I noticed a lot of the other adults around just rushing, trying to make it all okay. Let's get the right shoe. Let's get the right this. Let's get your colouring perfect. And actually, I just knew he had some emotion that needed releasing. So I just sort of sat down on the floor and just settled into it. And it's so much less stressful as a parent than trying to stop the emotion. It's like, actually, he just needs to get it out. So I just sat there, you know, close to him. Oh, sweetheart, you know, it's just not right. Yeah, the colouring's just not right. I'm sorry. And then he's like, rah! And then he reached the end of his feelings, and it's like, oh, cooperative again, you know. He's like, and you know, and the neuroscience of that is that actually, you know, his limbic system, the emotional brain, kind of gets regulated, so he can actually think straight again, and you know, be more sort of cooperative and be back to his normal self. So but yeah, I can send a little article about that because I think it's a very helpful tool. And just briefly, you know, there is also a setting limits tool, so it's not that we, you know, we listen to the emotions, but if they're lashing out, you know, I can't let you hit, and we stop the behavior, but with warmth and love and firmness. So it's, there's that too.
Thanks, Kirsty. Yeah, there's some really lovely tools from that practice, from that approach. We'll touch in on probably most of them on the course, you know, because they nearly all fit with focusing. But that's all. Yeah, listening is great. Okay, I want to say a little bit about, this just was 2 more minutes. What next? So we're doing a course on this basically in January. It's a 6-week course. It's for anyone who knows a little bit of focusing. You need to know something about it. So I'll say a bit about that in a moment. But there's some of the stuff we're going to be talking about in the course. Yeah, we're going to be looking at more of that whole process of when we get triggered, what different parts get evoked. And how to be with them, how can focusing help us to be with them. We'll look at this implicit memory and kind of how that works. We'll look at repair and healing. That's a big piece, repair with our children, but also in a parenting. How can we kind of get those places in us that still feel wounded? How can we be with them? And we'll be looking more at this connected listening and this deep listening, stay listening, they call it. And we're looking at... also kind of playfulness and loving limits, some of these other topics from hand-in-hand parenting, how they fit in with focusing, how you can, because another really hard piece for me, at least as a parent, is how do I say a no without losing it? how do I have a kind no? And that's another place that focusing and hand-in-hand parenting come together. So yeah, that's a very brief touching on some of the themes in the course. I'll send out some information about the course. And as I said, it's kind of aimed at people who know a little bit of focusing. Now, if you don't know focusing, that isn't necessarily a problem, because you know there may be time between now and then. The course starts on the 27th, I think, of January. Let me just check. Yeah, 28th. So I'm going to do a kind of day intro in January on the 24th. It's not on the calendar yet. That'll go up. So it'll be like a mini intro to focusing for those who want it. Even if it's just 2 or 3 people, I could guide us into that enough to get us going. Or you could just learn it one-to-one. You know, find a teacher. I could recommend many people, some of my students who would gladly do 3 or 4 sessions, just offering you some of the basics. It's actually quite... you can pick up the essence of it reasonably quickly. It's not like you have to spend months and months doing it before coming to the course. You could get some essentials in place and then come to the course. So just to alert you to that. And I'll send all this out through the emails that I've been given through the registrations. So that's probably what I need to say. Any last urgent questions that belong here, I'd welcome. Do you have a limit? Yeah, from the course, we will have some kind of limit. I don't know what that is yet, though, Matt. I imagine it'll be something like 10 or 12 people with me and Kirsty. Yeah, so it won't be huge. Because, we won't have time to kind of go into things in more detail. Okay, great. So thank you, everyone. Thanks for joining us. I hope it's been helpful and brought some insight into this whole area. And I know there's a lot more we could have explored, but feel free to get back to us with questions as well after this. Maybe there's something left over. That's fine. Follow that up. And see you. Hope to see some of you again. All right.
Thank you, everyone.
See you later. Bye. You can unmute yourself if you want to say bye. That's fine. Or chat goodbye.